Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for listening. Jim Nance from CBS is the guest on this episode. Jim's got the Masters from Augusta this week, and obviously he is the top NFL play-by-play man for CBS. So we do a lot of golf and NFL with Jim, scheduling things, and a little discussion about Alex Trebek and election coverage. So it's a good chat with Mr. Nance. If you missed any recent episodes of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, you can go into the archives. Last week, Paul Heyman from WWE was on. Kirk Herbstreit 2 weeks ago. Peter Schrager 3 weeks ago. Ernie Johnson 4 weeks ago. So check those out. If you missed any of those, give those a listen and subscribe to the podcast. It is much appreciated. All right, let's get right now to Jim Nance from CBS Sports. All right, joining me now, the voice of all things CBS Sports. Big week with the Masters, NFL going on. Jim Nance. Jim, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you, Jimmy. It's good to be back on.
Great week to have you on with the Masters and kicking off. Lot to get into. I'm going to start, though, with something that everyone has been, I shouldn't say, that's a stretch. A few people have asked me, and I've been wondering myself, and it's an important question. What the hell will happen on Sunday if the Masters runs late into the 4 o'clock NFL games?
Well, I'm the wrong guy to ask. I would like to know the same thing. I don't think it's going to happen. They've definitely created a strategy. That's the one thing I do know, for this to probably wrap up between 2:30 and 3 o'clock, leaving time for the green jacket presentation. But I don't know the answer to that. The weather is not great, which could create delays. But believe me, Sean McManus, as he is with all things, he's all over it. He'll have a very good plan worked out with his team. And that's one of those things, Jimmy, I don't concern myself with right now. I'm there to tell stories.
Yeah. It's just, I got to say that fans have asked because CBS does not have a 1 o'clock game on Sunday. They just have three games at four. I'm amazed by this, which I guess I shouldn't be, because nothing should amaze. You know, Tony getting the week off because you're in Augusta. There people are. That's become like a storyline.
I didn't realize that, but you know, hey, it's a regional week.
Yeah,
I can't tell you what the breakdown would be of the games that we have. So it's not a national window. So there are weeks where we do a game on a regional week. I'll give you an example. Next week, we're going to be in Baltimore for Tennessee and Baltimore. Regional week, Fox has the doubleheader. I did happen to look at the maps because I was going to be doing, I'm going to be doing the game. And that's going to 40%, 42% of the country, I believe. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, on a regional week, there could be 60 to 70% of the country that's not getting one of our games anyway. So, hey, yeah. Look, I'm happy for him. He gets to stay at home for another week with Candace and the kids. And we've got a very busy stretch, by the way. It's another thing that I didn't realize was becoming such a story. But next week when I get back to football, we do three games in a week. So that's probably another consideration.
How do you do? I know you have the Thanksgiving. It's funny. Before we'll get to golf in Augusta, but it's funny you brought that up, because one of the things I did want to ask you is, you guys for Thanksgiving, CBS, you and Tony have, if I'm not mistaken, you have the first game, which is Houston at Detroit. Where do you stay? I am normally a diehard traditionalist in all sports. I it's time to get rid of the Lions on Thanksgiving, is my opinion. Where do you stand on that?
I'm like you. I like traditions, and they haven't been really relevant in a long time. Even though they showed some signs this year and blown some leads in some games, but I like it. It means a lot to that market. And, you know, for us and Joe and Troy on the opposite schedule, you know, it's Detroit, then Dallas next year, then back to Detroit,
right,
back and forth and so on. I like it. I got to tell you, the ratings are probably going to be the same if no matter what the matchup was in that window. Houston, right, obviously is having a down year as well. And you watch, the ratings will not plummet.
Right.
It's just part of the Thanksgiving tradition. But having been around and done it for so many years in Detroit, that would be that would really hurt that market. They have a big parade that goes through the streets. So this year it's going to be different down Woodward Avenue. It's a big part of the Thanksgiving tradition there. And don't forget, Jimmy, you are a traditionalist. You just said that the Thanksgiving Day tradition was started by the Lions.
Right.
I'm going to tell you a story here I've never said publicly before. Okay. Just triggered a thought.
All right.
The guy that started it, who owned the Lions in 1934, was named George Richards. Okay. He was the owner of the Lions. He started it. I don't know where I found this, but 10 years ago, I was going to be in Detroit and I saw that the name was George Richards. Why did it stand out? My father-in-law's name is George Richards. Okay. So, I was getting ready to propose to his daughter, my wife, Courtney. And I thought, man, I want to send a message somehow. How can I do this? So during the Thanksgiving game, I didn't propose right at that time, but I told Courtney that she should watch, especially early in the second quarter coming out of commercial, make sure your dad's watching. So I was working with Phil at the time. And Phil was talking about some things he's thankful for on Thanksgiving. He said, what are you thankful for, Jim? And I proceeded to say on national television, I'm thankful for George Richards. Now, I'm imagining at that point, my father-in-law has just fallen off. And I said, I just want to say, George Richards, I'm in love with your baby. And if you didn't know that already, it means the world to me. What you've done, what you've produced. And it's just important for me to say that. That's what I'm thankful for. Thank you, George Richards. And then I said, as an aside, and of course, George Richards was the owner of the Lions who started the Thanksgiving Day tradition of football on this very day back in 1934. Second down and six.
Well so done. Well
it
done.
It made total sense to the viewer at home.
Exactly.
And meanwhile, well done. I gave my father-in-law a heart attack back in Cleveland.
That's a good Easter egg right there. Just to clarify, too, you know, it's not just about that the Lions are always terrible. The thing is, when you have the Cowboys, they have so many natural rivalries. I mean, even this year, you know, the Cowboys stink, Washington stinks, but it turns out that game is going to be like matter for the division. You could put out almost any team against the Cowboys, and there's a history. The Lions just don't, outside of the Bears, maybe, they just don't have that with enough teams where you get, but like you said, you know, if you're the NFL, why change it? You're going to get a monster number no matter what the game is in that slot.
They kind of changed it when they added the third game anyway.
Yes, and that's a good one this year.
And by the way, the third game this year happens to be Pittsburgh and Baltimore, so it's a monster game. Yeah. I'm telling you, if you made that change, and you're going to have to do it in advance, yeah, you're not going to have the flex to be able to. I don't think you would. I don't think you would flex a team off of a schedule and put them on a Thursday on a late notice. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But let's say you went into the season and you know you could have guessed wrong. You could have put the Giants or the Jets in that window. You know who knows?
Right.
You could put any number of teams in a game would have been a stinker anyway.
Yeah.
We've had, you mentioned the Bears. That's a rivalry. We've had the Bears there on Thanksgiving a couple of times. We've had the Packers when we broadcasted a few times. Those are old rivalries and get back to the heart and the start of that Thanksgiving tradition. This is, interestingly, the second time we've had Houston at Detroit. And the last time they played there, and again, it was our game, it went to overtime. And there was a famous play in that game where Justin Forsett, the running back for Houston, appeared to have been tackled and fell to the ground. And then all of a sudden he got up and scurried like 70 yards for a touchdown. Jim Schwartz was the coach of the Lions, and he ended up throwing the challenge flag, but you're not allowed to throw a challenge flag on a play that's going to be automatically reviewed anyway.
Right.
So he got docked. They got docked. The game ended up coming down to a Shane Graham field goal. It was a wild 34-31 game, and it did a monster number, and no one was – maybe Houston was good at that time. But, hey, it's not about that.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving – hey, the word that comes up with Thanksgiving, Jimmy, around the train of table – forget football. It's Thanksgiving. You guys have your traditions. You know, you got your favorite pies and side dishes and all that. Yeah. Why are you trying to kill the side dish of the Lions? Come on.
It is good because you can sort of deal with family in that one. You don't have to pay close attention to Lions. You deal with your family, get that out of the way, and then you lock in on the Cowboys.
Come on, man. We want you hanging on our every word. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Is it? I have a couple more NFL. We will do golf, I promise. Is it strange this year with without Brady and the Patriots being bad after, I mean, you and Tony and you and Phil basically have lived in Foxborough from September to December all these years. Obviously now, you know, is this, the Steelers are still great. The Steelers have always been good. You guys do a lot of their games. The Chiefs are, in my opinion, not even close, by far and away the best team to watch. But it does feel like a little void there without the Patriots and Tom in New England.
Well, it, no question, it feels a whole lot different than it used to. But as I sit here with Week 10 looming, the breakdown of the teams that we've covered this year, Jimmy, the team we've done the most so far, our crew, is New England. Did them four of the first 7 weeks. We've done them four times. Now,
that's crazy.
I don't expect we're going to see them anytime on the remainder of the schedule. One never knows. But when I was up there for the San Francisco game, that was Week 7, the great Chad Finn from the Boston Globe called me and said it was my 100th Patriot broadcast of all time.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I know it's got to be pretty close because I had discussed that with Stacey James from the Patriots. He's an outstanding PR guy, does it so well. And we talked about it in the past. I never quite had the hard number, but Chad was pretty certain about it. And he had the first one I had done, which was back in 91 with Hank Stram. So I think it was legit. But what I wanted to know was, has any other network commentator done any other team 100 times? Now, you have a good history of the of.
I mean,
of
my guess would be Matt in some role with maybe either. But
the Cowboys.
But they would, I think they probably split something between Dallas, the Giants, and San Fran. They were all good in those 80s.
That's the thing. They weren't just the Cowboys, of course, were what they were, but they had a lot of other good teams in the package at that time. So I did ask Chad if he had a breakdown of who else had done a lot of Patriot games. Mm-hmm. And the other one you could come up with, though, is Al. How many times has Al done a certain team? So I asked Chad that question, and the answer was Al has done 64 Patriot games.
So Al's done more Patriots than even Cowboys, because the Cowboys always loaded up Monday night, Sunday night. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know the answer beyond
back in those ABC days.
Chad was all over it in terms of what was going on up there. And I thought that was interesting, though, that Al was the second most. And, of course, he has so many years to be able to call on. And that's a staggering number. And I wonder if that would be the most that he would have for any one team. I would think, though, with, you know, his career and 30-plus years of doing it, I would think that there's a good chance he's had three a year of, let's say, Dallas on average.
For sure, yeah.
He might be moving in on 100.
Yeah.
There, not already exceeded it. Yep.
Yeah. This is going to come up this week in Augusta when you call the Masters. Tell me NFL, and then you haven't done the Masters yet, but what you expect there. How different, if at all, has your job been this year without the fans in the building and the COVID situation?
Well, the COVID affects everything. Our job is different, Jimmy, because everything is being done the way we're doing this right now by Zoom. I didn't even know what Zoom was 12 months ago.
Right. And you doing the team meetings in person, or those are on Zoom as well?
100% Zoom.
Okay.
We even do our production meetings, game planning for our what our strategy is on Zoom. And that's not exclusive to us. I know that's the way that everyone's doing. The teams they are not allowed to be in the building. You do not meet with the team. So it's far different in that respect. And for me, and every network has a different strategy, and ours is proving to be very sound in terms of keeping people safe and healthy. But when we get into a city, we get in by Friday for a Sunday game by 6 o'clock to get tested. So we get the swab test every Friday night. And then basically it's a quarantine from that point until you get to the game on Sunday. Short of it is, I don't see Tony until we're both in the booth on Sunday.
Wow.
So that's taken away the chance to go out and just face-to-face talk about the game over dinner. That was our approach all the first 3 years. And that sounds like, what are you getting done at dinner? You'd be surprised.
Yeah,
you'd be surprised. That's that was our lives. We would find a great restaurant and a quiet table, and there would usually be anywhere from 4 to 6 of us, maybe 8. But we would sit there in no hurry to rush through a meal. We'd drag it out. We'd be talking football. We'd be talking strategy. You wouldn't believe how many things you would come up with that are discussed while breaking bread that ended up on the broadcast on Sunday. Mm. Now I don't see Tony, and equally as bad, Jim Rickoff and Mike Arnold, our producer and director, I don't see them. I have only seen them for a grand total of about 45 seconds so far this football season. Yeah. It just oddly enough, we're staying at the same hotels. I haven't even accidentally shown up on the elevator with them.
It is interesting that everything has changed so much, but I will say this, your crew, and I think all the crews across all the networks, you wouldn't know there's been this, big change in the way you guys do your jobs. The game, when you're a fan sitting at home watching the game, the telecast comes off just as any other telecast. So
that's what we have to achieve. Yeah. It does feel a little bit different to me. I do feel like the repartee is still there. The chemistry's there, but I think there's another layer of it that we're not able to tap into. But you know, one of these days, hopefully soon, the world will be normalized again, and we'll be back to doing it the way we used to do it.
You got that right. Now, tell me, what do you expect here for Augusta with no fans? Which surprises me. Was there ever? I mean, you know, it's outside. They couldn't put, I don't know, 1,000 people in there. They couldn't. If it's outside, I think you got a better chance, but they couldn't pull that off.
You know, golf has gone fan free until the last couple of weeks. There was an event over in Bermuda 2 weeks ago, and then last week in Houston, where they allowed a limited number of fans to attend. But this decision was made a long time ago, and that's the way golf has been played since its return in June. So, look, the reality is we're going to be right back here in less than 5 months. I saw last night, it's been 530 some odd days since Tiger won the Masters. And when it ends on Sunday, we're like 140 days away from starting up another one. So, like, we're going to have two in a hurry. The hope for, of course, is that in April, you know, we'll be back on track. I don't want to make any long-range forecast in terms of where we are with vaccines and all. But, you know, I would like to think that come April, you know, we'll have already completed a Final Four, and maybe there'll be some fans there, hopefully, and maybe we'll be back here with the patrons back in attendance again. But golf is used to this, Jimmy. This is this was a decision that was, when it was made, I'm not questioning at all, I think it was the right decision. And at this time, you know, when you start bringing fans and you start bringing in a lot more volunteers, and there's a lot more infrastructure you have to have. And
so what, anything changes for you over these next 4 days? Are you still in the same position you're in when you call the tournament, or any, you know, are you further away? Are they moving you around?
It'll be the same. I'll be back and forth between the 18th Tower and Butler Cabin. My access is going to be much more limited. I don't anticipate having a chance to be around the players or be able to catch up with them in the clubhouse because there are all these bubbles and things like that. But again, that's the right thing. And I want to say, though, that for the golf fan out there, all the pre-tournament talk is about how different things are. We're in November instead of April. So where are the, you know, where's the color on the course, the blooming dogwoods and azaleas, and what's that going to be like in November? And what about the fact that, there are no fans, and it's all pre-tournament talk. I'm going to tell you, on Sunday, when we have a winner, all that talk's going to be washed away. It's going to be about the guy that won the Masters tournament and took the green jacket. So it's a lot of good pre-tournament talk, and rightfully so. But once we get into the actual tournament and the telecast, I'm telling you, TV normalizes these things. I had 10 broadcasts, 10 tournaments this summer, and it's amazing to be there in person and see no one around. Right. And then what it looks like, you know, the way the shots are framed. It's a big director and producer show with Steve Milton and Lance Barrow. They'll cut, they'll create energy. You'll be bouncing around, and it's going to be, you know, the strategy at home, you know, all the key parts of the course and where you have to take advantage of certain holes. And that's not going to change. It's going to be it's going to feel like the Masters, believe me.
Hopefully we pick up a couple of dirty words with no fans there and the mics picking up things. That's always fun for people like me who have to put content out on the internet and get a call for dropping an F-bomb or something. That's always,
you know, our first,
and then you have to do the apology. Like the nation is, you know, basically so offended that the mics picked up a curse word. Sorry for that on our air.
Well, the very first golf shot we had,
I remember
we came back at Colonial.
Yeah.
There was an F-bomb that was dropped. I try to have some fun with it, though. I know that people are out there thinking that I'm hyper offended, and I've never, because I know that this like people think that suddenly I've just decided that I'm going to go in and try to clean this up. But yeah. I try to bring some levity to it, and I think you recognize that at the time.
Yes, yeah. I always when you get the Aaron F-bomb on a sports telecast, I always look to see how the announcer apologizes. That's where the fun part comes in, to see, you know. I know you're limited for time. I wanted to ask you about two things that have nothing to do with the Masters of the NFL. Did you have any relationship? Did you know Alex Trebek at all?
Never met him. Man, I would have loved to have met him.
Yeah.
Just because as a broadcaster.
That's why I asked.
Yeah, the way he moved through that show and kept it snappy.
Yep.
Pretty amazing. And then when you hear that, and then he would tell you what the right answer is. The way that he was able to, well, of course, that was one of Nay's most famous paintings. And,
right.
And he was rattle off the year. And
right.
It's as if he didn't even need the cards. He knew all the answers.
Yeah.
Like he would have been the ultimate contestant. But
yeah,
I've enjoyed reading the tributes. And I think it's pretty cool that a guy that hosted a game show could have such a lingering effect, a positive effect on people, to see how beloved he was.
And yes,
I was touched to see, Jimmy, you may have read it, that his last wish, and he had talked about it, was that he wanted to be able, the last day of his life, to sit on a swing on his property that apparently he built and constructed, right, and sit there with his wife and just look out over the horizon and be lucid and be able to talk about the things that he was grateful for in his life. I mean, it's so Alex Trebek. It's so perfectly planned and spot on. And he was a great one.
I brought that up because I know you have an appreciation for broadcasting and TV hosts. And I want, the other thing I wanted to ask you, there's nothing to do with sports, and I'm not getting into politics in any way, shape, or form here. I know you're a CBS guy. I'm sure you watched a lot of CBS coverage, but maybe you dabbled with CNN and MSNBC. A big thing on Twitter and last week was John King of CNN, Steve Kornacki on MSNBC, of how they work those maps. And how they, you know, with the numbers, the math, live TV, were you into that at all? I mean, you with CBS, I mean, you with the elections, you probably did stuff with Rather, who was amazing on election night. But were you at all on the bandwagon of being impressed with like how those guys worked those maps and did their jobs last week for like 4 days straight on no sleep?
Yeah, I'm a channel surfer because I'm looking at it really a whole lot from the production side of it,
right,
and the information flow, who's got it first, who's willing to dare and jump out there. And so, I mean, I saw a little bit truly everybody.
Yeah.
But on that night, I saw a number of times, I saw John King, and I thought what he did was, and I know Bill Hemmer was doing it at Fox. And again, I'm switching around. And I thought that all those guys that had the familiarity with counties, past elections, what it looked like in 16 and what the vote difference was when Hillary ran against Trump and
right.
all that. I thought it was exceptional. And I thought it was good enough to, on several fronts, including the names that I mentioned. I thought, man, if I had a way of getting in touch with them, I'd love to drop them a note and just tell them I admire the job that they did.
Yeah. I saw a tweet. I was going through some tweets just to see if there was anything going on with you. And so there were a couple of tweets of like, I want Nance and Romo on election night doing coverage.
Which is, they were busy enough. Come on.
Yeah. You need another job.
I need another one.
Yeah.
But, you know, that would be the excitement that goes into those shows. Again, we're not talking politics. And
right.
I'm a longtime observer of like election night coverage. And it's not just every 4 years. Okay. Right. I really enjoy it. It does have a, like a Super Bowl kind of feel to it, though. You know,
yes,
like you
don't absolutely
know what's gonna happen, and
I wish people at home who are not TV geeks or nerds like me, like they would understand when they're doing that job or you're doing your job, whether it's at Augusta, the NFL, you have someone talking in your ear the whole time and you've got, and you're live and you've got to bounce around and do a million things at once. It's, you know, people think if you're on TV, oh, it's easy. Everyone could do it, but I could not handle someone in my ear talking to me while I'm trying to do something with the, is there ever an issue where you have to like tell the person in your ear, please stop talking to me, give me a minute, or you're just such a pro and you're used to it by now.
Used to it by now. And it's not a constant running commentary in your ear because they've got a job to do. They're calling for replays and they've got other places they're going. I don't hear everything that they're saying. Their mic is not open the whole time. They have to push a key to talk to us in the booth. But they're basically directing you to where you're going to go next or what's about to appear on the screen. That's when you boil it down, that's one of the first things you have to really adjust to as a broadcaster is how to be able to take in information and be able to deliver at the same time. Your brain's working in a couple of different ways there. And it's particularly difficult, Jimmy, when you're on camera.
Right.
So, you know, when you're on camera, you can't really just pause and make sure you got that straight. But if you're covering a football game, you don't know when someone's talking to you and the cameras and the shots are on the field or on a player or on a coach. You have a chance to lay out for 3 or 4 seconds and absorb the information that's coming at you. But I've been doing it for a long time and I have a lot of studio experience. So the studio folks really have to deal with it and it's more problematic. Mm-hmm. And a great producer understands that they have to use their words sparingly. And not mm-hmm. jarringly. They have to be able to talk to you in a way that it's not going to distract you. They can't be too up and down. They have to be very even keeled and succinct.
But before I let you go, I don't know if you give picks. I know people listening want to pick for the Masters. Can you throw maybe like one or two names out there of who people should keep an eye on?
I always find it dangerous. I get asked about picks for football games and things like that. Then I got to go deal with everyone. I will just say this. This is kind of not making a pick, but it's somebody to watch for.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know, listen, you're a fringe golf fan at best, right? I mean, right. I know it's not.
Yeah, yeah. I'd pay Masters. I'll pay attention, obviously.
Okay, there's a guy that, you know, the name Bryson DeChambeau.
Yes, okay? the big slugger.
One year he has gone and rebuilt himself into the Incredible Hulk. And he has gone from being upper third, if you will, in terms of driving distance, maybe at best, to now being the monster of all monsters off the tee, can fly it, drive it farther than anyone we've ever seen playing at a competitive level. I'm not talking about the freak show that is the long drive competition. You sometimes channel surf and land upon that show. I'm talking about guys that can actually play. And he's doing things by remaking his body, reinventing his golf swing that we've never seen before. Now, he won the most recent major championship, and that was at Wingfoot in September in the U.S. Open, and he bludgeoned the field. I mean, it just destroyed everybody, won by six. I've never seen anything like it, Jimmy. It's always about Tiger. It really isn't. It rightfully should be. Right. I'm talking for years, for 20 years, and he's the defending champion. But being here, I would say that it's more about Bryson right now. More people, even with Tiger defending, can't wait to see what he's going to do here. I mean, it is the show. Mm-hmm. The golf has a new thing happening, and it's this guy. And if he wins this week and wins two straight majors, my gosh, even you're going to become a golf fan. Okay, you're going to get hooked.
And this one's tough only because, you know, you got the competition with the football Saturday and Sunday. But yeah, I mean, you're going to obviously, if you know that guy's in it and he's blasting the ball all over the place, you're going to flip over and check it out for sure.
He will definitely be blasting the ball. He doesn't know any. He basically comes out of his shoes almost to just blister every single shot. And I mean, he's flying it in some cases, maybe 80 up to 80 yards farther than other guys are. Course is going to be soft. I'm not going to try to give you too much analytics here, but I'll leave you with this. A lot of rain. When you get rain golf, what that means is that you don't get the rollout. So the guy that can fly it longer has an advantage. Yeah. So it sets up for the big hitter this week. The guy that's the popcorn hitter and hits it in the fairway and a dry fairway, it rolls out an extra 30 yards. That guy's going to have a tough time competing this week. So it sets up well for Bryson. He's full of confidence. And the game is entering a territory we've never seen before with a guy that can play the game this way. So
a lot going on here, because you got, like you said, you got him. Tiger's the defending champ, so he's always in the mix. The weather's supposed to not be great. I'm still going to wait to see Sunday if you guys run into the NFL and watch all the football fans freak out on Twitter when the games are not on CBS. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, hey, that's not something that I concern myself with, but we're going to be coming on early on Sunday at 10 o'clock, 1 o'clock on Saturday. Yep. So I hope you have a chance to check it out. There are some other good stories, guys like Rory McIlroy in this sport. He's trying to do something that only five players have ever done in the history of the game. That's when all four Grand Slam events,
The Sunday at 10 will be perfect for the diehard sports fan who's there waiting for the NFL to start at 1. You get the golf at 10. They'll be locked in on that at 10 o'clock for sure. That'll be.
Look, I don't know what the ratings are going to be. And again, it's another thing I don't ever concern myself with, because I don't have a memory of a game or a golf tournament based on what the final number was. Like people say, oh, man, when Phil Mickelson won this event in 2004, it's one of the biggest things that ever happened in to the tournament as far as a champion and a story, because he had never won a major and he holed a putt on the 72nd green to win it. It was on an Easter Sunday and the ratings were low. They were is one of the lowest rated final rounds ever. And here's one of the most popular players.
Yeah.
The weather was good in the Northeast and all these kind of factors that brought the number down. I only know this because a lot of times people want to say the quality of the event should run parallel to what the rating is. That's just not true.
Well, there's a million factors.
My memory of Phil Mickelson winning here in 2004 has absolutely nothing to do with what the audience size was that day or what it wasn't. It's what the quality of – I'm on the what is the quality of the story side of this whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's a million factors going to ratings. We've seen it this year especially. And, you know, it's a bigger discussion that we get into it another time. But the cord cutting and the streaming is just – it's on a pace that's rapid. So, you know, networks got to keep adjusting because that's, you know, it's a whole new world,
A couple of weeks ago, our game, Pittsburgh at Baltimore, which was a regional game.
Yep.
And on that particular week, we were in the high 60s as far as the percentage of audience. It was the highest rated regional game that CBS had broadcast in 4 years.
Yeah.
That surprised me because I know the ratings across the board, they've been difficult to match up with last year, but That was a big number. It had one loss total between the two of them. It ended up being a heck of a game that came down to the last play. But it showed that the audience is still there if they want it and the game's compelling.
And, I think you're going to see great ratings, too, in the second half of the season. It's been a good season. There's a good teams, good players. I think you're going to see very good ratings the second half. The election's over. That's cable news is now not going to dominate people's lives. I think the second half of the NFL season back end will be big for numbers.
You know, one of the other problems we had early in the season is there were a lot of bad teams. And a lot of the matchups had a really good team against a really bad team.
Yeah.
So, we have some more flexibility in the schedule coming up the back half of the year. I agree with you, by the way, with the election over and that taking away some of the interest level for people. But, I just want to say that on Thanksgiving week, we talked a lot about Houston and Detroit. Yeah. We're going to go from Detroit to Tampa. And I know the matchup doesn't sound as sexy now coming off of the Bucs performance on Sunday, but we have Mahomes against Brady.
No, that will do it. Listen, people are overreacting to one loss by the Bucs. I mean, listen, they look terrible. He looked terrible, but he was fine for a couple of weeks. That game will still be a hugely anticipated game.
Huge, because they had some epic matchups, in some very key spots. So Kansas City at Tampa is the third game in a week for us. And
that'll be a big one.
Forward to that one. Of course, it's a Super Bowl year for us, Jimmy. So, I'm starting already to try to figure out what that might look like.
I was going to say, I got to have you on again closer to that, because that's going to be amazing to see how that all works out with what we're dealing with the pandemic. So, all right.
I look forward to our next chat. Thanks.
Yes, me too. Good luck this week in Augusta. Appreciate you coming on. I know it's a busy time. Have fun. Enjoy it.
Enjoy it. Thanks.
Take care.
Thanks, Jimmy. That was fun. Good stuff.
I know I could keep going, but I know they wanted you.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I've got to run out to the course. So I thank you so much. That was great.
All right, that wraps up this episode of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My thanks to Jim Nance. Great conversation. My thanks to you for listening. If you missed any recent episodes of the SI Media Podcast, go into the archives there and check them out. Paul Heyman from the WWE was on last week. Kirk Herbstreit of ESPN 2 weeks ago. Peter Schrager from Good Morning Football 3 weeks ago. And Inside the NBA host Ernie Johnson 4 weeks ago. So we've had a great run of guests here. Check them out if you missed any of those episodes and subscribe to the SI Media Podcast. All right, that wraps up this episode. Thanks for listening and take care.